This Asma bint Umayyah's nobody was like her and Fadhla in their loyalty to Fatima al-Zahra. Nobody. And this lady, you know, her husband asked her a question which can happen to all marriages in this hall today and to anyone who's listening to me. Her husband said to her, would you come with me to Africa? It wasn't part of my marriage agreement that we're going to have to move to Africa. But the religion of Islam is bigger than our marriage. So would you come? She could have easily replied to him by saying, you never told me you wanted to travel. And why are you telling me about traveling? And why have you ruined my life? And why? That's the problem. As in some, if you give them 2 holidays a year, a nice car and a nice apartment, that's their dunya. You say, excuse me, what have you done for Islam? You, what have you done? Husband or wife, what have you done for the religion? Nothing. Asma looked at him, you know what she said? She said, if we go to Africa and Islam survives, then I'll come with you anywhere you want me to go. And it was his establishment in Africa that remains a sadaqa jariya for him until today. What's the greatest number of Muslims in Africa? Where? Egypt, Nigeria, and then Ethiopia, isn't it? Ethiopia is the 3rd largest nation of Muslims in Africa. Egypt, Nigeria, and Ethiopia. Every Muslim who says, Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah, the thawab goes to Ja'far and Asma. That's the meaning of sadaqa jariya. That in life, a struggle you may take, you may go under the ground, but the struggle remains in your name forever. Every time, Ashhadu anna Muhammad. Not only that, the Imams of Ahlul Bayt began to marry women from Africa on the basis of Ja'far. Imam al-Sadiq's wife, Imam al-Kadhim's wife, Imam al-Rada's wife, Imam al-Jawad's wife, Imam al-Hadi's wife. All of them are from where? Where are they from? Africa! In other words, the Imams of Ahlul Bayt were showing us, when that man settled in Africa, Rasulullah had a vision that the people of Africa are humble people, honorable people. I want Islam to go and reach the people of Africa. He remained in Africa from what time? From the time he did hijrah. And this was the first hijrah in Islam. You know, sometimes someone says to you, you have to respect the muhajirun. You say, which muhajirun? Say, the ones who went from Mecca to Medina. No, the first. The ones who went from Mecca to Africa. They're the first muhajirun. You find that he stayed there for how long? From the time he did hijrah. He stayed there for another 7 years. Then another 7 years later, until the battle of Khaybar. You see, what had happened was, Rasulullah had written a letter to the Najashi. The Najashi, while Ja'far was there, Ja'far ibn Abi Talib, you know what he did? He made the Najashi come towards Islam. You know, the Quran revealed the verse about the Najashi being a Muslim? Chapter 5, verse 82. وَلَتَجِدَنَّ أَقْرَبَهُمْ مَوَدَّةً لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا الَّذِينَ قَالُوا إِنَّا نَصَارَى ذَلِكَ بِأَنَّ مِنْهُمْ قِسِّيسِينَ وَرُهْبَانًا وَأَنَّهُمْ لَا يَسْتَكْبِرُونَ وَإِذَا سَمِعُوا مَا أُنزِلَ إِلَى الرَّسُولِ تَرَى أَعْيُنَهُمْ تَفِيضُ مِنَ الدَّمْعِ مِمَّا عَرَفُوا مِنَ الْحَقِّ. You know what the Quran says? You will find the closest people to the Muslims are the Christians. Because their priests and their monks are humble human beings. When they hear the words of Islam, their eyes overflow with tears because they've recognized the truth. When Ja'far told him about Islam and he kept explaining to him, the priest said, you know what, I'd love to become a Muslim. And he told his whole tribe, whether you want to join me or not is up to you. I'm joining the religion of that man in Mecca. I want to join the religion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And that's why this man became a Muslim and recited the nikah of Rasulullah to Habiba, the daughter of Abu Sufyan. Rasulullah, his wife, Habiba, the daughter of Abu Sufyan, Habiba, when she joined Islam, had married Ubaydullah ibn Jahash. But this Ubaydullah ibn Jahash, when he reached Africa, he saw a beautiful Christian woman one day in Africa. When he saw her, she said to him, the only way you're going to join Islam, you're going to marry me, is if you leave Islam and become a Christian. He said, very well. He left Islam, became a Christian. She remained alone. The Holy Prophet knew Abu Sufyan would use this against Islam, saying, my daughter gets married in your religion and your men leave her. So the Prophet proposed to Habiba, the daughter of Abu Sufyan. Who read the nikah for him? The Najashi, the emperor who had become a Muslim. Eventually later, the Prophet wrote a letter to the Najashi. What did he write? He wrote a letter saying, oh Najashi, I want you to send Ja'far, son of Abu Talib, and his three sons. He had a son, Abdullah, married Sayyida Zainab. A son, Aun, married Kulthum. A son, Muhammad, as well. He said, I want you to send them back towards Medina. They have served their time in Africa. Now allow them to come back. And you know, Ja'far himself narrates, he says, for years, while I'm in Medina, we used to receive the letters. The Muslims have been attacked at the Battle of Badr. Ali ibn Abi Talib has destroyed them. The Muslims have been attacked at Uhud. Ali ibn Abi Talib has destroyed them. The Muslims have been attacked at Khandaq. Ali ibn Abi Talib has destroyed the opposition. So each time the opposition was destroyed by his brother, he's thinking, you know what? My brother's getting all of the accolades at the moment. I wish I could go back. Rasulullah brought him back. Do you know when the Holy Prophet brought him back? Just after Khaybar. Ja'far had taken the journey from Africa. It takes quite a while in those days. The Prophet had returned from Khaybar. All the Muslims are victorious. Ali has annihilated the opposition. At this moment, the Prophet sees from a distance Ja'far, and he makes the most beautiful statement made. He says, I do not know which one to be more happy with, the victory of Ali at Khaybar or the return from Abyssinia of Ja'far. What a line. That shows you how much he loves those two. I don't know which one to be more happy with, Ali's victory at Khaybar or the return from Abyssinia of Ja'far. Straight away he hugged Ja'far and they began to cry and cry. For years they haven't seen each other. Then he said, you know what, Ja'far, I'm going to give you a present better than any present anyone can give you ever. Now Ahlul Bayt, when they give presents, we always imagine presents as some material thing. When Rasulullah told Fatima Zahra, I'll give you a present, what did he give her? The tasbih of Fatima, isn't it? It's always a spiritual present. He said, Ja'far, I'm going to give you a present which is the best present anyone can give you. He said, what is it? He said, I'm going to give you a salah, which if you recite it, all of your sins are forgiven. Salah Ja'far al-Tayyar. Many of us would have heard of Salah Ja'far al-Tayyar in our life. Even in many communities, I always mention this, in many communities, if someone's prayer goes a bit fast or goes a bit slow, just a bit slow, because you know, you find that if the prayer goes, for example, let's say 2.5 minutes, because that's too long now for Salah, all of a sudden people shout out, what are you doing? You're praying Salah Ja'far al-Tayyar? Because the idea is Salah Ja'far al-Tayyar is a very long prayer, isn't it? Like you only have to recite Surah al-Zilzal and Adiyat about 199 times. But he says to him, whoever recites this Salah, Allah will forgive all of his sins. And if he does it every day, Allah will ensure that on the day of judgment, there is no sin on him whatsoever. This Salah Ja'far al-Tayyar, until today, many recite it. And until today, it has helped many. It was in honor of Ja'far's return from Abyssinia that Rasulullah gave him this present. And that's why only a year later, the Holy Prophet had sent an ambassador when he was spreading Islam. He had sent an ambassador to where the narrations mention to us that straight after Khaybar, before he even sent that ambassador, when Ja'far returned to the mosque of the Prophet in Medina, Abu Huraira narrates a very interesting hadith. Abu Huraira says, we used to love Ja'far al-Tayyar. People said to him, why? Abu Huraira used to sleep on the ledge by the Prophet's grave. Have you seen by the Prophet's grave? There's a suffa. They call them Ashab al-Suffa. The ledge, you normally see two men standing there, yes? Ledge by his grave, and there's normally two men standing there. That ledge, the companions who were poor used to sleep there. When they wanted food, they'd come to the ledge. They'd stay there until someone tells them, for example, like the Prophet, I'll give you some food. Come here if you're hungry, come with me. Abu Huraira says, we used to love Ja'far. Why? Because people knew how generous Ja'far was. You know, Abu al-Masakin, the father of the needy. Anyone who's miskeen, he gives. So he says, what we used to do is we used to stay there. And we used to ask Ja'far a question. Any question. Random question. Hajji Ja'far, we want to ask you a question. For example, oh, great Ja'far. He's like, go ahead. There's a question about, you know, like a legal question. We're not sure if this is halal or haram. Whoever it was, he'll say to them, why don't you come home, have dinner, and we'll discuss it. Abu Huraira says, what we started doing, even if we didn't have a question, we just tell him we have a question because we know there's a big dinner at the end in his house. Sometimes that makes you wonder how people approach you as well on other things. So you find that Abu Huraira says, wallah, any issue that would come up, any issue, he would straight away say, listen, why are you asking me here? Let's go home and have dinner, and then we'll discuss. Abu Huraira said, we'd go towards his house, and in the back of our head, we'd think, we can't wait for his wife's food. And let him talk and talk and talk about the greatness of knowledge while we're munching and munching and munching. So, he used to be known for this attribute, for this trait, and that's why when Rasulullah sent an ambassador to the Romans to bring them towards Islam, the ambassador by the name of Harith, they ended up killing Harith. It was very unusual for the Prophet to send an ambassador and they kill him. Normally the ambassador is told, listen, we're not interested in Islam, go home. But this ambassador was killed. When Rasulullah heard his ambassador to the Romans was killed, the Prophet was very much aggrieved. And he said, I will not accept these people killing my ambassadors. I have sent a man with respect. I have gone to send them the message of Islam. Why do they behead him and kill him? Why don't they just send him home? He said, get the soldiers ready. These people are not people I'm going to sit back and watch oppress others. So he said, who is ready to fight on this jihad? Ja'far came to me and said, Ya Rasulullah, Badr was Ali, Uhud was Ali, Khandaq was Ali, Khaybar Ali, please allow me. For I want to come near the taste of martyrdom. I want to taste martyrdom. The Holy Prophet said to him, Ja'far, will you lead the army of 3,000 soldiers? He said to him, yes. Where's the battle? He said, in an area called Mu'ta, in Jordan. Those of you who've done ziyarah of Ja'far al-Tayyar in Jordan, the area of Mu'ta, he said to him, that area, go towards there. You are in charge. If the banner falls from you, and you know the banner is important, isn't it? In Islam, when a person holds a banner, it shows that we're still strong. The moment the banner falls, then you know that you're in a predicament. As in any time a banner, which is the flag, as soon as the flag falls, then you know that if you're the leader of that army, you know now it's difficulty because the backbone of your army is now broken. So he had the banner. When he had the banner, he said, if you fall, then Zayd takes the banner. If Zayd falls, then Abdullah ibn Rawaha takes the banner. They went, the Roman soldiers had 12,000. They had 3,000. I tell you, Abdullah ibn Umar narrates, I have never seen a performance in the battlefield like the performance of Ja'far on that day. He said, and you notice that the sons of Abu Talib, when they're on a battlefield, they are the most ferocious warriors. He said he went through the Roman army. They were amazed at the prowess of this man as he was fighting. And you know how old he was on that day? 39, 40. Still young. 39, 40 years of age. He said he went through the Roman army one by one. And they recognized that a man like him, you can't fight one-on-one. A great soldier, you can't fight him one-on-one. And they detested him as well because they could see he was piercing through the army. They surrounded him. He said they shot 53 arrows on his body. How many? 53. That when they collected his body later on, these Muslims are looking, they're like, what is this? It's like a hedgehog on the ground. 53 arrows on his body. But do you know, a great soldier, even if you keep piercing him with arrows, the main thing for him is to keep the banner high. Isn't it? You try and keep the banner high. Because if the banner is high, even though you've got arrows, then your fellow soldiers can still see the flag is up. He tried to keep the banner with his right hand. Someone came from behind and chopped his right hand. And then he tried to keep the banner with his left hand. And now these arrows are piercing more into him. Someone chopped the left hand. Now without hands, he was in a predicament. And he fell towards the ground, and they all come and began to attack him. In other words, he had his two hands. By the end of the battle, his two hands had gone from him. The Holy Prophet, what did he do? The Holy Prophet was in Medina. The Holy Prophet, at Salat al-Fajr, some narrations mention, he said, "Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un." The companion said to him, Ya Rasulullah, what's wrong? He said, I've just been informed that Ja'far, son of Abu Talib, has been killed. They said to him, Ya Rasulullah, how do you know? How do you know? He replied by saying, do not worry. When the report comes back, then you'll be able to verify that he was killed. Not only has he been killed, his hands have been chopped. I now, leave me now with Fatima al-Zahra, he said, because we want to go to the house of Asma to console her and her children. Do you know how hard it is for a lady to hear that her relative has had his hands cut? As in, you say someone died naturally, it hurts you. But to hear that the hands have been cut, savagery. He entered. You know, Rasulullah does something beautiful. As soon as he enters, he sees Abdullah, son of Ja'far, husband of Bibi Zainab, at the time was very young. He comes and he plays with his head, pats him. When later he's asked, why do you pat? He said, for every hair of an orphan that you pat, Allah gives you light on the day of judgment. He patted Muhammad, he patted Aun. At this moment, what happened? Asma walked in. Ya Rasulullah, what's the news? He said to her, Asma, inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. She began to cry. She said, Ya Rasulullah, where's Ja'far? All of you know where I'm heading. Ya Rasulullah, where's Ja'far? Because you know, she had remained loyal to him in Africa. So she traveled the world with him. It's difficult. It's really difficult to lose someone like that. He said to her, Asma, inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. They killed him. She said, how? Oh Allah, give patience to Umm al-Baneen when they told her how. He said to her, they cut the right and the left. And he had arrows surrounding his body. Arrows. So you know what Rasulullah did at this moment? She began to cry and cry. He said to her, do not worry. I have asked Fatima al-Zahra to cook food and there should be a majlis for Ja'far. Because many people ask me, why is it that we have majalis with food? Where is this from? This is from Ja'far ibn Abu Talib when he was killed. That Rasulullah told Fatima al-Zahra, oh Fatima, go and cook. I say to him, Ya Rasulullah, who cooked for Fatima when she died? Who did the majlis for Fatima al-Zahra? The whole ummah had left Fatima. The ummah didn't even know where Fatima is buried. Even our seventh imam had a son called Abbas. And that Abbas, the son of the seventh imam said to him, make a majlis and give food. So Abbas said to him, oh my father, on whose honor do we give food in majalis? He said, Ja'far, son of Abu Talib. Because Ja'far, son of Abu Talib, when he died, Rasulullah said to Fatima al-Zahra, oh Fatima, go and cook and give out food to the whole nation in honor. This Asma, she remembered what Fatima did. She remembered what Fatima did. So you know what this Asma did? This Asma washed the body of Fatima when Fatima died. And this Asma is the one who says, I saw Ali ibn Abi Talib begin to wash her body, then he left her body. And he went in the corner of the room. I said to him, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, you are the man who lifted the door of Khaybar, but I see you crying. I see you crying in the corner of the room. Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, why do you cry? He said, Asma, do not blame me. She said to him, what do you mean? He said, as I was washing her body, my hand came across her broken rib. My hand came across the room. Rasulullah saw Asma crying and crying. He said to her, Asma, do not worry. Allah has replaced the hands of Ja'far with wings. And that's why our fourth Imam says, Rahimallah Ammi al-Abbas. Allah has placed mercy on my uncle Abbas. He gave himself and his life away altruistically for Allah. And he lost his hands, but Allah replaced those hands with wings like he did for his uncle Ja'far. What do we mean when we say wings? We don't literally mean wings. In heaven, the angels majestically have wings. If Allah replaces your hands with wings, what does it mean? It means that you are now as majestic and more than my angels in heaven. I see you as high as my angels. Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib was devastated when he heard the news. He used to love his brother Ja'far. And the worst feeling for Imam Ali was knowing that Ja'far's hands were chopped. You know why? Because to Imam Ali, what was he thinking when he fell from the horse? Did he have hands in front of him? Because normally if you fall from a horse, your hands should be in front of you. But what if your hands have been chopped? It means you fall face down on the earth. May Allah give patience to Imam Sahib al-Zaman. What I'm about to narrate is the hardest. Wallah, all you have to see is that shrine at Karbala. How can you ever visit Hussein without going to Abbas first? You know, he loved his brother. He loved him. You will never in your life, you will never see a brother love his brother like this. It's a reciprocal love which is unique. Abbas loved Hussein, and Hussein loved Abbas. From a young age, when Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib was writing his will before he died, and Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, what do the narrations mention? The narrations mention that Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, when he was dying, he called Imam al-Hassan. He said, Imam Hassan, come next to me. So Imam Hassan came next to him, then he said, Aba Abdullah, come here. Imam al-Hussein came. He said, Aba Abdullah, you have to look after Imam al-Hassan. Zainab, come here. She came, look after Imam al-Hassan. Kulthum, come here. She came, look after Imam al-Hassan. One by one, Umm al-Badeen came to Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen. She said to him, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, all of them, you gave them a wasiyah. Abbas is crying. Ya Abu Fadl. Ya Abu Fadl, don't cry. All of them you gave a wasiyah except Abu Fadl. He said to her, no, I have a different wasiyah for him. Bring him to me. And you see him coming as a young man to his father. His father looked at him and said, Abbas, all of them I've told them to look after Hassan. I want you to look after Hussein. I want you to look after Hussein. I say to him, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, I wish you had seen what he gave away. He kept on begging Aba Abdullah. He said, Ya Aba Abdullah, let me fight, please. Please let me fight, I beg you. I can't take seeing them doing this to you. You know, Aba Abdullah, he wanted to show him one thing. He wanted to tell him, Abbas, your major battle isn't them. Your major battle is if you can get to that water and not drink it. That was why he doesn't allow him to fight. He wants him to know there's a bigger battle, the nafs. So he keeps telling him, let me fight, let me fight. And you know the moment that hurt him a lot, there were two moments. The first moment that hurt him a lot was when Shimr said, where's the sons of Umm al-Baneen, my cousin? I want to protect them. Let them come out, I'll look after them. He wanted to go out and attack him. He wanted to attack him. Aba Abdullah, because Aba Abdullah is such a noble human being, Aba Abdullah said, Abbas, wait, he's your cousin. Show respect. I know that he's the worst of the worst, but show respect.
But the second thing that hurt him was the one that made Abu Abdullah let him go. He said to him, Ya Abu Abdullah, I hear Sukaina saying Al-Atash, Al-Atash. Abu Abdullah looked at him, he said to him, Okay, Abbas, you hear her saying Al-Atash? He said, Yes. He said, Bring her some water. Bring her some water, O Abbas. And you know, Abu Fadl, you ask him, he never ever lets you down. In his life and after he's passed away. Those of you who've tried asking him, does he ever let you down? Those of you who've tried asking Umm al-Baneen, has she ever let you down? You know what Umm al-Baneen says after Karbala? This Umm al-Baneen, amazing, amazing. She says, Wallah, if you gave me the whole heavens and the earth, and you gave me 70 Abbas, I'll swap all of them to see Hussein's head. What a mother. Why Umm al-Baneen? She said, because Fatima wasn't there. I have to look after Fatima's son. When he went out towards the Furat, the narrations mention as he went out towards the Furat, there were already a number of soldiers by the Furat. He managed to get through those soldiers. They knew this was Abbas, not someone you can fight. He then got to the water of the Furat. When he got to the water, as soon as he picked up the water, he felt the coolness of the Furat. And anyone else would have drunk. But you know what he said? How could I drink the coolness of this water while my brother drinks the syrup of death? He rode back, and you all know where what I'm about to describe to you. May Allah take your heart to Karbala. May Allah return you to that shrine. As he was about to return, he had ridden his horse. He's now holding the water. He could see Sukaina and Ruqayya from the distance. He could see his beloved sister Zainab. He could see her. As he's now riding his horse, confidently that he's about to return, a man came and struck the right hand of Abu Fadl. A man came and struck the right hand of Abu Fadl al-Abbas. He tried to hold on to the flag in the other hand. When he tried to hold on to the flag in his left hand, all of a sudden a man came and struck the left hand of Abu Fadl al-Abbas. He now was trying to hold the water and the flag on his chest because he could hear the tears of the children of Abi Abdullah. At this moment, Harmala bin Kahil, Harmala, was standing next to Umar bin Sa'ad. Umar bin Sa'ad said to him, Harmala, what are you waiting for? Can't you see the right eye of Abbas? He said, yes, I can. He said, strike your arrow on the right eye. All of a sudden, an arrow pierced the right eye of Abu Fadl al-Abbas. Ayatollah al-Naini was reciting a majlis in Karbala. When he recited the majlis, he got home. He wanted to sleep that night. In the middle of his sleep, he says, I saw in my dream Fatima al-Zahra. He said, when I saw her, she was crying and crying. I said to her, oh Fatima, have I made a mistake in my majlis? She said, no. He said, then why do you cry? She said, oh Ayatollah al-Naini, I want you that whenever you recite the masaib of my son Abu Fadl al-Abbas, I want you to tell the people that normally when someone falls from his horse, he falls with his hands in front of him. Oh Ayatollah al-Naini, my son died, Abbas, and fell on the ground without any hands in front of him. When he fell on the ground, one of them came. He struck him with a bar on his head. Now he's alone on the ground. It's at this moment, for the first time in his life, for the first time, he says, Akhi, Abba Abdullah. Never had he said Akhi. He had always said Sayyidi. Always he used to say, my master Hussein. The only time he ever said Akhi was this moment. He said, my brother, help me. Abu Abdullah rode his horse. Imam al-Hussein, he began to ride his horse. When the horse was walking, it stopped. When it stopped, the Imam got off. He saw the right hand on the ground. Imam continued on his horse. Then when he continued, the horse stopped again. Then he saw the left hand of his brother on the ground. Now, when he got closer to Abu Fadl, these soldiers saw Imam al-Hussein. They began to run away. He looked at them. He said, "You run away now. Where are you running? When you've killed the son of my father, you've broken my back." He got closer to his brother. He could see his brother in his last moments. May Allah never show you a day where you see your brother in this much pain. Your younger brother, your older brother, he got near him. Now, brothers and sisters, I want you to hear this. Abu Fadl al-Abbas couldn't see because there was blood on his eyes. He couldn't hear because that bar struck him so hard that he couldn't hear. So he knew there was someone around him. He couldn't see or hear them, but he knew someone's coming. So he called out, I beg you, don't strike me. I beg you, don't strike me. Put my body on that camel. I know my brother will come and collect me." When Imam al-Hussein came, how did Abbas know it was Hussein? He can't hear Hussein. He can't see Hussein. The moment he felt the kiss of Hussein, he knew it was Hussein. There was the softest kiss. He knew, "That's my brother." And Imam al-Hussein looks at him. He says, "Oh Abbas, now my back has been broken, oh Abbas." But you know, this is the ultimate altruistic human being. As soon as Imam al-Hussein took Abbas's head in his lap, Abbas removed his head from the lap of Hussein. Why aren't you comfortable? Why don't you stay on your brother's lap? He knew that Imam al-Hussein could hear him, even though he couldn't hear Imam al-Hussein. He said to him, "Abu Abdullah, you place me on your lap, but in a few moments, who will take your head and place it on their lap?" I say to him, "Oh Abu Fadl, I wish you had seen when Shimr sat on the chest of your brother." But then the second thing that he did, the second thing, that's the one that hurts. Imam al-Hussein wanted to carry Abu Fadl back to the tent. He looked towards him. Of course, he can't see him, but he just said, "Abu Abdullah, I beg you, leave me here." He said to him, "Why?" He said, "I've never let down Sukaina. I've never let down my sister Zainab. But now I'm going to let them down." I'm going to leave you with this final story. In Iraq a few years ago, there was a young man who was crippled, who was sitting by the grave of Abu Fadl al-Abbas. May Allah allow you to sit by that grave. The man was crippled in his feet and he was a cripple in his hands. He was sitting by the grave of Abu Fadl al-Abbas. He says, "On this night, I saw everyone doing matam of Abu Fadl al-Abbas. Everyone was beating their chest." He said, "But you know, my hands are crippled. I can't bring them that close together." He said, "But I wished I could have." He said, "At that moment, I saw a young man with the most beautiful face." He said, "He came towards me. He looked at me. He said, 'Young man, why don't you stand up?' He said, 'Because my feet are crippled.' He looked at me and said, 'Stand, try standing now.' He said, 'I stood up for the first time. I had never stood up before in my life.' He said, 'At this moment,' the man looked at me and said, 'So why don't you beat your chest?' He said, 'Because I'm crippled.' He said, 'Wallah, if I had hands, I'd give them to you. But they took my hands away from me on the 10th of Muharram.'" MashaAllah. MashaAllah.
ہو چکے بے قسمہ